This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing, and a special guest ringside to begin our conversation, the legendary wrestler Jake the Snake Roberts. Good morning to you, Jake.
Good morning, guys.
Jake, well, I hope you're okay. But Jake.
Oh, man, I'm doing great.
You used to spend some time right here in Baton Rouge, not only on the circuit. You lived here, didn't you?
Yeah, I lived there for about 3 years, man. I used to live over Lafayette, too, you know. Lafayette, yeah. Sure as hell did. I got a sister who lives in Hammond now. But, you know, Rocket Robbins, she wrestled also. And, yeah, Louisiana was a big part of my life, man.
What part of town did you live in?
Over Sherwood Forest.
There you go.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I bet the neighbors liked the fact that Jake the Snake was down the street in case something happened.
I wasn't too far along in that career. I mean, I spent time in Lafayette. Well, back in Lafayette, it was 74, 75. And I was over Sherwood Forest about 76, 77. And then I went to Canada for a while and came back and lived off of... I can't remember the dang name of the road, man. It was the next exit off on 12 after Airline. Anyway. I'll remember about 3 days from now. I'll call you back.
All right. Well, you've had a turbulent life in and out of the ring.
Yeah. Yes, I have.
How's it affected you?
Well, it destroys you, man. I mean, I look back now, and I've only been doing the right thing, honestly, for... just a few months, and I don't know how I survived it, man. I would be dead. You know, I know that whenever I was in my darkest time, which was about 4.5 months ago, I know I'd wake up in the morning and I was, you know, disappointed that I woke up. You know, that I really wanted to die. I wasn't suicidal, but I was just hoping for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that is suicidal in a way, because it's really sick when you get jealous when you see that somebody else has died and you didn't get to. And that's the way I felt. Basically, my body was just a big lump of crap, 305 pounds, maybe a little bit more. I couldn't get up out of a chair, couldn't get up out of the floor. Somebody had to help me up. I mean, if I went down the floor, brother, it's going to take two people to get my butt up, man, because my feet... are so messed up. I had to have surgery years ago, and there's so much calcification in my feet. I guess banging on the mat all those years and from the surgeries and from my bad habits that my toes wouldn't move. I had a second toe on my left foot that was rolling under. When I take a step, I'd break it, which was very nice. Now it's a dang numb. I can't feel anything in that toe, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm living with it. My hands were curled in. I went to the doctors, and they told me I'd been hitting the head too many times. I can't imagine how the hell that happened. everybody's coming out with these things on concussions. And I look back, and I think, my God, I wrestled 37 years. If I only got one a year, that was 37 concussions, you know. But I'm sure that I probably got one about every 6 weeks. You know, I know I have a problem with my speech and my thinking now.
Well, you sound fine right now, and
my brain flits.
well, hang in there with us, and we want to hear your story. Now, you're the son of Grizzly Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you had a.
I didn't have a choice there.
You didn't get along with Grizzly.
He never raised me. He didn't raise me. I live with my mother and my stepdad. There were a lot of problems in the Smith family, so to speak.
Who was your mother?
Her name was Paula Crockett, man. She's still in Gainesville, Texas. I had a brother and sister. My sister was kidnapped and murdered, I guess, 1978, I believe. Mm-hmm. That helped out with the brain and everything else.
Well, what do you think about people like Vince McMahon, who's made billions, literally billions, on your sport, if it is a sport, and I think it is.
Right.
And here you are, 57 years old, literally fighting for your life.
Well, I'll tell you, Vince did reach out to me, and he put me through rehab twice, and that's not cheap. The second one was 16 weeks, and I come out of that, and I was using again within, well, an hour, hour and a half, you know. It's a decision people have to make, I think, that is where it comes to, you know, and the problem with me was I had no hope left, you know. I'd retired from the ring, and that's what I did for 37 years. And Christ, what do I do now? I can't work at 7-Eleven. I can't stand on my feet because my feet are so messed up. My hands are curled, so I can't count money. So what do you want me to do? And obviously I'd screwed up some relationships with WWF and WWE, whatever you want to call it. And I'd certainly not help my situation by doing the wrong things, you know, being an alcoholic, and being a drug addict. Certainly doesn't, it's not good on your resume, you know. And I was, again, I was so far down, man, and looking up was just something that didn't happen, because whenever I looked up, I just seen the bottom of the barrel. I wasn't in the barrel at the bottom. I was underneath the damn barrel. And with no hope at all. And my buddy called me, Diamond Dallas called me, and he just asked me how I was doing. You know, and of course, an addict will lie to you in a heartbeat, man, because he doesn't want you to know how bad how bad off you are. And I was ashamed about how bad off I was financially and everything else. So he says, look, man, he says, so your hands are bothering, your feet are bothering. I said, yeah, you know, but I'm okay, I'm fine. He goes, well, what do you weigh now? And I told him, you know, 305 pounds. And he says, dude, you can't live like that. Hell, no wonder your feet hurt. They're carrying around all that damn weight. And I'm like, yeah. And he kept going on and on and on, just would not shut up. You know, telling me I was eating the wrong thing. You know, that stuff was bad for me. This stuff was bad for me. I'm like, yeah. And he says, you know, why don't you try? I'm going to send you some paperwork and some DVDs. Why don't you try this stuff and tell me how you feel in 3 weeks? And basically, I just said yes to get off the damn phone with him. He was nagging me. I was pissed off, you know, because here I am having to tell somebody else I'm not doing worth a shit.
Oh.
And I did have a little. Oh, sorry, sir.
All right.
I'll work on that.
Please do.
I will. I'm very sorry. And so he sent the stuff. I started doing it. And in like 2.5-3 weeks, I'd lost, 10-12 pounds. About a couple more weeks, I was up to 20 pounds gone. And, if you go around and stick 20 extra pounds in your pocket and try walking around for the day, you're going to be pretty miserable at the end of the day. And I pulled off 20 pounds, and, gosh, I had a little get up and go. I was doing more outside. I was walking, you know, and it wasn't hurting as bad as it did. So he called me and said, you know, how's it going? I said, man, I've lost 20 pounds. He says, great, I'm going to come see you. Well, I didn't want him to come see me because I didn't want him to see the house that I was living in. I didn't want him to see me in my current shape, and because I knew that he'd recognize the telltale signs of drug use and alcohol. So he came anyway, and he brought a camera guy, which made it even worse. They're filming, and told me, let's try the workout. And I tried a few minutes of that DVD, and, man, it was brutal. But I tried it, and 4 minutes, I was angry at myself. I was angry at him for showing up. I was angry because of this, because of that, you know. And, basically it was all about me. The anger was, but I was wanting to put it off on somebody else. You know, that's what addicts do. So I just, I couldn't deal with it. I told him I've had enough. And he got up and he went back inside, back into the kitchen, and started making breakfast. And I'm like,
all right, well, we got to take a short break, Jake the Snake. And hopefully we can coax Jake to stay with us for a time, and we'll be back after this brief pause on WRKF, and also we'll hear from Kevin Cope, the president of the LSU Faculty Senate, who's a big Jake the Snake Roberts fan. All this coming, but first this pause from the good folks at WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Kevin Cope standing by, and Jake the Snake Roberts, the legendary wrestler, 36 years in the ring, one of the finest men of the squared circle of his generation, and with the body to show for it. And now he says he ballooned to 305 pounds and has lost some weight, feeling better. But 4.5 months ago, he was suicidal, and he's had a turbulent life, including a fractious relationship with his father, the legendary Grizzly Smith. Glenn on Corsi. Glenn, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. My question to Mr. Roberts is, how did you learn how to do the DDT? I used to watch you as a kid. And who was your favorite opponent to wrestle against at Mid-South Wrestling?
In Mid-South, I guess my favorite opponent had to have been Len Denton, the grappler. He's the one I invented the DDT with. And as far as how I did it, it was an accident. I had him hooked in a front face lock, and he was pushing me around the ring trying to get out of it. And he stepped on my foot, and we fell backwards, and he didn't get up. And, of course, me being the perennial good guy down there, I leapt to my feet like, no, I didn't stumble and fall down. I'm not that way, man. I'm cool. He did something. But at the same time, I realized he wasn't getting up. So I thought I had something. So I worked on it.
All right. Thank you, Glenn. You used to bring a snake in the ring. Didn't you name the snake Damien?
Yeah. I did a lot of stupid stuff back then, you know. Coming up with that snake idea is just was ignorance, alcohol, and marijuana. I was listening to Monday Night Football on a long road trip down there. And this is true now. And, you think stupid stuff. That's why they call it dope, okay? And at the time, Dallas, the TV show, was real hot. Mm-hmm. Well, I surmised that, wow, that's really cool that JR, man, that's like JR Ewing, Jake Roberts, cool, man. That's so cool, you know? And I had a few more puffs and listened to that football game. The quarterback for the Oakland Raiders at the time was Kenny the Snake Stabler, you know? And I love Stabler. I thought, snake, man, the snake's kicking butt, dude, you know, going on and on. Have a few more beers, a few more puffs. And I started thinking, you know, it'd be really cool, man, if like a dude had a snake, he took it in a ring, that'd be so cool. Wait a minute, Jake and Snake Rhymes. Whoa, it could be me.
Mark downtown. Mark, you're on with Jake the Snake Roberts.
Hey, Jake, I'm a huge fan of yours. In fact, you were the only reason that I ever watched that wrestling at any time. You were probably the greatest interview that was ever on then or now, and I really think you could teach a lot of these guys how to give a good interview that was polished and something besides spitting and getting up in somebody's face, because you were pretty classy. Thing I'm interested in, I got to disagree with you about one thing. I thought your snake was cool, but
well, you were scared of him. I was.
How did you learn? Where did you develop your signature move? I think it was the DDT, wasn't that it?
Yeah. We just went over that, bro. That was actually the first time. It was in New Orleans. We were out in St. Bernard Parish over there at the building, and that's where it happened the first time. And after that, I just kept working on it.
Nichols on South Sherwood. Thank you, Mark. Nichols, you're on with Jake the Snake Roberts. Nichols?
Hey, good morning. Hey, how you doing? Jake, you brought a lot of joy to us back in the mid-80s. I was a teenager back then. Just wanted to, I guess, say thanks for that, and please don't give up hope. God has a plan for all of us, but The Wrestler, the movie, I heard it was based on loosely on your life. Did you see it? What did you think of it? And how realistic was that?
I seen it, and I thought it was fairly well done. I thought that Mickey Rourke did a pretty darn good job. It did seem like it was based on my life, but they'd never tell me that because they had to pay me. And it's a funny thing about Hollywood, they don't want to spend a buck. You know, they're like promoters.
Well, Jake, we're glad you're doing well, and you sound
strong.
I
am doing well, man. I am, and you know, I'll tell you something good right quick. I've lost 46 pounds, and that's a big deal, but it's not as big as what's happened to me mentally. I am so fresh in my mind now. I'm happy. I wake up in the morning, and I have had dreams the night before. I had no dreams 4 months ago. And I just want all the people out there that are in the same situation I was, I don't think you could be in any worse situation, just to reach out and grab somebody. Grab us on a DDP yoga mat. Come on there and check it out. There's a lot of stuff that we're doing. We're doing a cooking show, which is funnier than heck. And you can see some video of me, Jake Snake DDT, on YouTube. And it's showing my career, not showing my career, showing my walk in this journey with this yoga. It's saving my life, man. And if somebody told me I was going to do yoga in my life, I'd probably slapped them.
Well, thank you, Jake. God bless you, man. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. And now we're joined by Kevin Cope, LSU English professor. Almost 30 years, a man who grew up on the West Coast and was wrestling big in California.
Well, it certainly was, and it's always a surprise what you encounter here in the hall of the man of the magnificent microphone. But certainly when I was in California as a very young man, I was a great wrestling fan. I followed the National Wrestling Alliance, Sam Muchnick, commissioner, and with Judo Gene LaBelle as the ring official and Dick Lane as the announcer, I saw them all. Mel Moskris, Freddie Blassie, John Tolos, Sonny Warcloud, Bull Ramos, you name it. I've been at that squared circle and seen the action. It's an honor to share a card with you today.
You know, I used to go every Tuesday night to Robinson Auditorium down the street from me in downtown Little Rock. Used to walk across the river to see it. And I'd see people like Danny Hodge and Jack Briscoe. And one night, Joe Louis was the referee.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I think I'm looking through that fine white shirt you've got on, and I think I see a set of black and white stripes there. You're kind of the referee for the intellectual discourse of this town.
Well, did they have a place in Los Angeles where you used to go?
Well, I would occasionally drive up from San Diego, where I live, to the Olympic Auditorium in downtown Los Angeles. But I also went to the Coliseum in San Diego, which no longer exists. It's been bulldozed and replaced by an expensive hotel. But I had many a fine night there ringside.
Well, Kevin Cope, who's been head of the Faculty Senate at LSU for 5.5 years and will next year be on the faculty at Louisiana State University for 30 years. He arrived as a young man of 26, and now he is 55, and he spent most of his life at LSU. Before we get to what's happening at the Old War School, a quote from Jake the Snake, you being a man of letters, what did he say? I looked up and saw the bottom of the barrel.
Well, that is one of the finest combination of metaphors and dramatizations I've ever heard. I remember some years ago I was watching modern wrestling, and I heard Hulk Hogan ask Ric Flair, when you're laying on the mat unconscious and you're looking up, do you see the sun rise? That's definitely in this same genre, and I think that just shows that a clever person can get something out of any kind of comment at all. Jake the Snake is a consummate poet of our times.
Well, Kevin Cope, you are a man who's had a few battles on campus, and sometimes the battles in academia rival those in the squared circle, don't they?
Well, that's it. As we were talking earlier in the break, Jim, wrestling is the most perfect manifestation of social criticism in our time. It's got clearly defined goods and evil, it's got umpires, and it's got a lot of cheating. You put all those together, and you come up with the academic lifestyle of Louisiana.
A lot of cheating, you say.
Well, cheating may be a little bit too tough of a word. You know, if you look at professional wrestling, you see that cheating is part of the game, and so it is in academe nowadays. That is, partly as a result of excess regulation, to be a little bit more serious. That is, we now, of course, have every kind of transparency law in the book, public records documents. If Jim Inkster comes on the campus and asks a question of the former chancellor, Mike Martin, anybody can call for that email. The result is that everybody starts to develop tactics of evasion. It's like the Kremlin, you know. You walk out in Red Square and have a secret ear-to-ear conversation, or you try to dodge the transparency laws by using your private email account and hoping nobody subpoenas it. all of these, it's not just LSU, are common fare in academe nowadays. It's unfortunate, but that's the way that it is.
And you were displeased with the way the Board of Supervisors handled this planned merger of the two main positions at Louisiana State University.
Yes, yeah, certainly. I want to make clear that the faculty from both the LSU campus and the LSU campuses around the state have not really taken any position on this because, unfortunately, the board, I think out of anxiety, fear, and maybe obedience, has decided that it doesn't want to publicize the contents of its deliberations. So at that meeting on October 26th, and there was a follow-up meeting on November 2nd, the report on which the vote was supposedly based was distributed at 4:54 p.m. on Friday afternoon, followed by a vote at about 5:30. Now, we're talking about the merger of elements within a multi-billion dollar system, if you believe the advertisements for the next president. I should think that more than 28 minutes of deliberation time and a wider distribution than about 25 meters would be in order.
So you think they might have talked about this before the meeting?
Well, let's put it this way. We've got a hired attorney there who is infamous on the campus, and all of a sudden, within 28 minutes, he comes up with a resolution that sounds as if it were written by a combination of Jake the Snake himself and Abraham Lincoln. And this, of course, staggers the imagination to think that this could not have been the product of thought beforehand.
Well, you made a claim that you thought the fix was in, and we're going to have a redo tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. I've actually seen the resolution that's the redo, and the motivation behind the redo is twofold. One is the supervisors know very well that our accrediting agency, which is what gives us the authority to receive federal funds to give a degree and, best of all, to play football, is extremely concerned and has asked, why do we not even know who's in charge of the campus? The other is, of course, to satisfy the attorney general, who has checked in and indicated that this process seems a little bit fishy to him. The resolution tries to suggest that the current interim president has two persona. It's sort of like the Holy Trinity minus one, you might say, not three persons in one body, but two persons in one body, that the two positions, chancellor and president, are completely operationally different at the moment. I think you've got to be, to put it a little bit archly, one hell of a Jesuit to believe that that is possible, that these two personae are completely different. We've also got this problem out there that if you consolidate those two positions, then the person who is sitting there at the A&M campus is, in fact, the end of the reporting line, the end of the command chain for the people at the medical areas and the people at the law school. That sounds like a consolidation to me, and that's something that requires a lot more regulation than a 28-minute discussion and then a sudden repentance.
Sounds like you're not happy about it.
Well, you know, I'm, again, sort of like professional wrestlers. I try to be optimistic all of the time, and I think the very fact that prize journalists like yourself are interested in what's going on and that thousands of people are hearing this at the moment indicates that there is a public reaction. Now, more seriously, I think that part of the problem is that the supervisors, most of whom were educated 30, 40, 75 years ago, are not quite up with the times, don't realize how diverse the population of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the academy, and the population at general has become. And as a result, they're not really emotionally ready to deal with the kind of diversity and open discussion that characterizes most big universities.
Well, tomorrow's a big day. The LSU Board of Supervisors will gather and in its wisdom will likely go forward with this consolidation. And they've had more than 28 minutes this time.
Well, that's true. But, of course, an experienced media person like you knows that sometimes these undertakings lose energy even with the public. And, of course, the fact that the supervisors meet in the middle of the day on a Friday during the holiday period, during the exam period, indicates that we're not going to have so big of a turnout as we did the first time this happened. But I'd point out that the first time it happened, back on October 26, there was a standing room only crowd. They weren't there to hear whether or not this or that room was going to be named after this or that voter. They were there because they were angry. And in the long run, of course, you've got more people involved in this than can fit into the Lakeshore building where the supervisors meet. You've got accreditors, you've got attorneys, and probably also you're going to end up with civil rights experts, because conducting a secretive search where the candidates aren't known to the last minute, that doesn't sound like it's going to go over well with people who are interested in open access for candidates across the full spectrum of diversity.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Kevin Cope will opine more about the board meeting tomorrow and the consolidation of the president and chancellor of LSU, expected to be approved overwhelmingly by the LSU Board of Supervisors. We'll talk with Kevin Cope also about the big pay hike for Les Miles after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for contributing to WRKF, and especially so during this hour of programming. Kevin Cope, president of the LSU Faculty Senate, is with us for a while longer, and tomorrow the LSU Board of Supervisors will gather at the System Building, where many maneuvers have taken place through the years, and this is one of the biggest, the consolidation of the president of LSU's system and the chancellorship of the flagship university, which is located right where Kevin Cope presides. Where's your office, by the way?
My office is in Pleasant Hall. I also have a Department of English office in Allen Hall, but mainly in Pleasant Hall for the faculty.
Do you know that Ruffin G. Pleasant was the first head football coach at LSU?
Well, I didn't know that. I always liked his name. It sounded sort of like Rough and Ready, a cartoon character of my childhood, but that's good information to have
actually,
on hand.
Actually, it was Charles Coates. He was the first coach, but Pleasant was one of his players, and he later became a coach.
Well, it's typical the first coach would get ejected early. They don't last long.
Well, what about Les Miles getting a contract over $4 million a year?
Well, this is a deeply ambiguous situation, I would say. On the one hand, of course, that's what the market is, and universities across the nation have decided to play to that market. However, I think given the situation in not only LSU, but across Louisiana, the giving of the raise at this point is very non-strategic and an extremely poor taste. I also wonder whether it's realistic or if the supervisors have once again got themselves into a frenzy or panic. I don't really believe for a moment that Les Miles would leave behind so premium a job and so fine an atmosphere as LSU offers to go up into the hills of Arkansas. So it also, I think, shows that the supervisors are quick to direct their attention to these kinds of problems and somewhat more insouciant with regard to the real problems of the university.
Insouciant. HB in Denham Springs, you're on with Dr. Kevin Cope. Hi, HB.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking the call. Mr. Cope, please don't take this as a facetious remark or opinion, but when Les Miles made the remark on television that he needed a raise to send four kids to college, I think it was a slap in the face to the medium income of the people of Louisiana when he was making $3.5 million plus perks. Also, the fact that the LSU is under major budget problems with the economy like it is right now, and I just think it was in very poor taste that he would make such a remark like that publicly. Your opinion, please, sir. Thank you.
I would agree with you, HB, and I don't think that your comment is facetious at all. I once calculated how much Les Miles makes on his base salary. It's roughly 11 cents per second. That is 24 hours a day, round the clock, a dime and a penny fall into the Les Miles household. You might call it a kind of perverse march of dimes. I wouldn't think, however, that this constitutes great need. It is unfortunate that a person would, as you say, HB, try to impose that idea on a state where the median income is in the 30s or low 40s and where people are struggling, try to raise a large family on $40,000 a year and you're not going to get very far. You can even hear that from the federal government. So yes, I think that there's a deeper problem here as well, and that is that the football program in particular, not all of athletics, but the football program has become isolated both from the university and the people. When we consider that sports is supposed to be an expression of the joy and athletic potential and the physical prowess of the people, that's a very unfortunate situation.
Hugh at LSU. Hi, Hugh. Good morning to you. You're on with Kevin Cope.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
I am doing great, and if I weren't, I'd be better with you on the line, Hugh.
What's on your mind?
I wanted to say hi and just ask you one thing. Make sure when you meet with those boys tomorrow over in the System Building that you don't say Pond Summit. It's Pond Summit, they may get it.
All right. He's fading on us.
I didn't quite get you, but you can be assured that when the supervisors meet tomorrow, I'll be making a comment, and a constructive one. We do not think that this is necessarily a bad move. All we want to do is have an open public dialogue about it.
Randy, thank you, Hugh. Randy and Zachary. Randy.
Hi there. Yes, I was always under the impression, maybe I'm wrong, but the number one purpose of a university was education, not athletics. Thanks.
I think you're right. There are actually three missions for a university that are very important, not only to students, but to people everywhere. Those are teaching, service, and research. Teaching, of course, that's obvious. It helps to improve the young people of our state and nowadays older people. Service, reaching out to the community, helping to share some of our knowledge, and research, producing that knowledge. Unfortunately, again, I think that the LSU system in its effort to rise in the rankings has gotten obsessed with the teaching-only component in the sense of producing degrees and students. Student credit hours in order to comply with legislation such as the LeGrad Act. But you're certainly right that all of those come before football. It's not teaching, service, research, and football, just teaching, service, and research.
Do you have interaction with the current president and chancellor, William
Jenkins?
Oh, yes.
Yes, the current president and chancellor and I speak on occasion and are good comrades with one another. We've sort of gone through life together, except in parallel and at something of a distance.
Mm-hmm. Rumor has it, you and Hugh being... people who follow the language, that the current president and chancellor has issued an edict for no foul language.
Well, I heard that. I heard a rumor that the level of language over in the LSU system office was heating up, probably a reaction to the circumstances in which people live. And I also heard a rumor that maybe that that language was not appreciated by the folks upstairs. So let's. It's a funny thing about foul language, you know. It means intimacy. That is, if you're comfortable in swearing with a person, it means that you're close up and personal. So maybe it's a bad thing to take the F word out of academic administration, because that suggests that communications are getting a little more tense.
So it was not the word that Jake the Snake Roberts used. It's one that's even more profound.
That's it. There's a hierarchy, H, S, and F, and we're going up that mountain quickly.
Well, you're a man of many pursuits, and little did we know that the man who has a PhD from Harvard was a big fan of professional wrestling. I suspect that a lot of your colleagues at Cambridge were not into pro wrestling.
Well, that's not necessarily so. I was a fan of professional wrestling mostly in my younger years. I'm not quite so keen on the sexed up, hyperkinetic wrestling that we see today with too much media.
Not what it used to be.
But I'll tell you, during my time, actually it was at Oxford rather than Cambridge, or if you mean Cambridge, Massachusetts. But in Oxford, England, I have seen English professional wrestling as well. Jack Pally and a few others. Jack Pally used to wear a pair of trunks with a Union Jack on his rear end. Talk about honky-tonk. There's a good example of it.
You did get your PhD from Harvard, right?
Yes, I got my PhD from Harvard. Just got confused because I spent some time at Oxford University, too.
Okay, I got you. Now, Dave Brubeck, you were born in the late 50s, as was I, and this is a man who in 1959... had one of the great compilations of all time in Take Five from the album Time Out. He died yesterday, one day short of his 92nd birthday. He would be 92 years old today. I'm sure you have some thoughts about Dave Brubeck.
Oh, yes. Well, there I hear the strains of Dave Brubeck in the background. Certainly, he was among the pantheon of American composers. And I think also it's an index of the change in taste in that somebody who is, what could we call it, hypercerebral, like Dave Brubeck, had a long and very genial slide. By that I mean that in the 1950s or 1960s, he was one of the most popular artists in the world, managed to keep it going, although gradually became more and more of an intellectual taste. If you go down to the Manship Theater and see a jazz concert, it's all aging intellectuals in the hall. No more beatniks anymore. So he certainly missed that. And another point can be made here about academe. That is, one of the best resources we had at LSU in the 80s and 90s was the College of Music and Dramatic Arts. We don't see the kind of support for that we once did. And perhaps the legacy of Dave Brubeck around the country will be to remind people that those lines of work require support as well.
Well, fine man in charge over there in Larry Captain. If anybody can pull it off, it's the captain of the Music and Dramatic Arts.
One of my favorite deans.
Yes, indeed. Dave Brubeck, he died on his way to see his cardiologist.
This perhaps is a statement about Obamacare. I don't. Of course, we in America have the belief that medical care can take care of everything. It can't. I think it's just amazing that a person can live to be 92 years old. You know, back in the 14th century, the average lifespan in England was about 28 and a half. Look at that. He's gone more than three times that and was playing professional concerts all the way into his late 80s.
Well, He's several tributes today, including some from National Public Radio, and justifiably so, for the great Dave Brubeck, who died in Norwalk, Connecticut. And Kevin Cope, speaking of 28 and a half years, he's on 29 and a half years at LSU, and tomorrow will be one of the big days in his life as the LSU Board of Supervisors votes on the consolidation of the president's and chancellor's jobs. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll talk soon, and thanks for listening, everybody. Stay tuned.